Hello and welcome to Unabashed Book Snobbery, the podcast where we gush about George R.R. Martin's A Song of Ice and Fire and damn its dastardly adaptation, Game of Thrones.
This is where being a book snob is a good thing.
Why do critics give this show a pass? Themes are just a great book report.
Actors do a fine job, it's not their fault, writing is so lame.
What you don't like our race, life's
for Mr. Martin, we assure you, books are not the same. We have strong female needs, but that is kind of homophobic, but more blatantly misogynist. Watch as they're raped or saved.
That theme song you just heard is the Book Snob Sing-Along by the Metronomes. My name is Kylie, and here with me are Julia.
Hey!
And Caroline.
Hi, everyone.
The three of us write for TheFandamentals.com, the geeky website for fundamentally sound fandom analysis. We normally do have a fourth guest on this podcast during Game of Thrones season, but I just forgot to ask the person we wanted because I literally fell into the trope of too gay to function this weekend. So all I did was read a gay book and write gay fanfic. It was really bad.
And you had a really gay kind of appointment.
Yeah, just so much all the gay, and I think I'm fully functioning now, fortunately, in time for the final Game of Thrones episode, Game of Thrones season 7 episode, I should say, called The Dragon and the Wolf.
I mean, don't tease me with the whole final episode thing, seriously.
Well, it's not coming back to 2019, right?
I don't know.
I'm gonna be so old by then.
So for any first-time listeners who are confused by your bisexual co-host is just ranting about her sexuality. What the three of us do here is rant about our sexualities and talk about how crappy Game of Thrones is. If you are a Game of Thrones fan, you might find this jarring because we don't think it's good at all.
Nope.
However, we do try to have a constructive conversation, give a review about it, and, yep, you walk away with your own conclusions.
They're like Fox News.
Yes. Now, a lot of our listeners are also Game of Thrones skeptics, I suppose you could say. And some of you have since given up watching the show. And for you out there, we have a recap of the episode that you missed, courtesy of Shira Shinobi, who I realize we've been just, like, calling on without introducing. Watch Legend of Korra, because that's a character there. And that was a really weird reference that we've been making this whole time.
I mean, I think he might have more characterization than any Game of Thrones character, even though he's, like, literally on the sidelines.
It's definitely consistent characterization!
Yes, it is.
All right! This week on Game of Thrones! Well, folks, it is the action-packed go, go, go finale we've been craving all season and not a minute too soon! We open in Cheryl's Landing, where Bronn talks about cocks for a solid 2 minutes as Deadpan's impressive, unsullied, and Dothraki forces show up. The small folk must be shitting themselves right now! I know I am! But wait, how did Grey Worm survive Casterly Rock? no one knows! John, Tyrion, and Sansa all arrived by boat. Brienne and Pad got there on foot, or something. Around Moat Caitlin, perhaps? And they all meet up with Larry and Bronn for another amazing walk-and-talk-and pairs sequence. But none of it matters when they reach the Dragon Pits on the outskirts of town. Cheryl marches in with her stormtroopers, and everyone gets mad as Deadpan takes extra time to show up with her dragons. Can't these quarterly reviews ever start on time? This one is a humdinger, too, and thankfully it came with a visual aid in the form of a live weight. It lunges for Cheryl, who seems alarmed, before Johnny explains the only two ways to defeat it, fire and dragonglass. Euron says he's going to go hide on the Iron Islands, or is he? Cheryl, meanwhile, agrees to fight alongside everyone as long as Johnny keeps the North free and independent. But Johnny is an honest man and explains how he already bent the knee to Deadpan. Cheryl starts off, and then everyone talks about how they are fucked now for reasons. Tyrion tries to talk with his sister, and it seems like he's convinced her to change her mind, so everyone fucks off. However, we learn it was only a clever ruse on the part of Cheryl. You see, Euron was secretly ferrying the Golden Company back to Waseroth because she knows the Lannisters will be totally screwed going up against Jonny and Deadpan's forces once the Army of the Dead is kept at bay. This actually makes a lot of sense, Cheryl, but it's apparently too much for Larry, so they break up. Not the OTP! At Dragonstone, Jon forgives Theon for betraying the Starks for some reason, and, emboldened, Theon goes on to persuade about 11 other Ironborn to help him save Yara from the clutches of his uncle. One seems very disinterested and begins fighting Theon to death, but he quickly gains the upper hand since he is no longer able to be kneed in the balls. What a significant recontextualization of his trauma! I am not enraged in the slightest! Up at Winterhell, things are sure heating up in the Arya-Sansa standoff. Sansa asks Littlefinger for advice, for reasons, and he tells her that it sounds like Arya is trying to fucking kill her and become Lady of Winterhell herself. This is brand new information. However, to everyone's shock, possibly Sansa's, she calls a meeting where she suddenly tries Littlefinger for all of his crimes with testimony conveniently provided by Bran Bott. He's executed, and this makes everything hunky-dory between the sisters again. Why didn't this happen 7 episodes ago, exactly? Sam randomly shows up, and he and Bran Bott exposition dump at each other at how Jonny is really the secret but legitimized heir to the throne of Waseroth. Well, at the same time, Jonny himself engages in some sexy times with a woman just revealed to the audience to be his aunt. Interesting optics, D&D, but we suppose they know how everyone watching has a healthy grasp of values dissonance. However, the boat scene is not the only thing steaming, because finally, up at Eastwatch, the entire Army of the Dead marches up to the wall. It turns out the newly resurrected Viserion, piloted by the Night's King, breathes very, very hot blue fire. We're not sure how it works, folks, but it melts a good chunk of the wall, killing Tormund and Beric. Maybe? Maybe not? It's so unclear! And allowing the entire Army of the Dead to pour through. At this rate, Winterhell will be in danger in a week! How can our heroes survive? Well, we'll have to wait until 2019, because that's all you missed in The Dragon and the Wolf.
Hooray!
Woo! That was a tiring one, dude.
It was very good. It reminded me of all the shenanigans in this episode.
So much fucking shenanigans. Definitely not 80 minutes worth of shenanigans. Let's just get that out of the way.
Well, I mean, I don't know. There's a lot, like, you know, there's the conversation between, you know, Brienne and the Hound, and there's Pod's dick joke. That took a while, and you know.
No, like, there were scenes that literally felt like they were on slow-mo.
I think
just, like we spent, like, 10 seconds watching, like, Tyrion walk across the dragon pit. You know, like... Why?
I mean, didn't we spend, like, the first, like, half an hour at the Dragon Pit?
No, half an hour was at the Dragon Pit, yeah.
Like, that's too long. That was too long.
So, like, I guess we can jump in and we can start with the Dragon Pit. Because I think my biggest issue with the plotting pace of the episode was that I totally didn't understand the stakes of the truce at all.
I still don't understand. Okay, first of all, like, if we're supposed to believe that, like, Deadpan actually has a toehold on, like, the actual continent of Westeros. That's not established at any point at all.
Yeah, like, bring your receipts.
Like, she failed to take Castle Rock, right?
Or well, did she?
Or did she? Because Grey Worm's alive.
Exactly. I guess she landed some Dothraki and some Unsullied, like, at King's Landing, like, now? Right?
I assumed they walked across.
They walked across the beach?
No, I assume they came from Casterly Rock and they walked across.
Is that what you assumed? And nobody along the way, like, said anything?
I mean, is it better for them to have boated there? Like, sure.
I mean, that makes little sense as well. I mean, okay, so take your pick. Which makes less sense? Them walking from the Westerlands to King's Landing or them getting on a boat and sailing around the continent? Those are your choices.
Them walking makes the most sense.
Okay.
Because there's literally no army to stop them.
Yeah, and Euron's fleet was in the water, being all fleety. Okay.
But what did Euron's fleet do exactly? He just, like, trapped them there? But then the meeting was called... I'm so confused. And then the invitations to the meeting were sent before the White was captured.
Mm-hmm.
And then Brienne and Pod walked down.
No, they rode their horses. Don't make it sound worse than it is.
Okay. I'm so confused.
I don't know. It's a big... I mean, just addressing the Casterly Rock issue, they basically just dropped that plot.
Yeah.
They just, like, Kawhi shrugged that away. Like, wasn't the whole point that, like, Grey Worm was trapped there? And
was he?
The whole point was that we were supposed to believe he was going to die for a second because he had just had a nice scene with Missandei. And, isn't it so sneaky? Was, like,
Casterly Rock doesn't matter, right?
Right, so isn't that so sneaky of Larry that he actually took Highgard? And it's just another, like, switcheroo fake out by D&D.
Yeah, but what were the consequences of that?
Yeah, I mean, the audience was surprised. Like, there's
a garrison at Highgard, one assumes, so that didn't get killed in the Lutrine attack.
So who holds Casterly Castle?
No one. It's so, like, dragons.
Did Deadpan, like, gain any land? Like, did she gain the reach?
Well, she's very worried about Cheryl taking back half the country.
So did she, like, conquer half the country with the loot train attack?
I don't know.
Nobody, like, actually bent the knee to her, remember? Except for, like, some moops.
Well, no, like, every Reach bannerman that wasn't Tarly...
But the Lannisters
have... Cheryl called all the banners in this episode, so she must have some banners left. Where are they?
What banners?
Exactly! I don't understand, like, what's going on in Westeros right now?
Are they from the Westerlands? What's going on with the Stormlands?
I don't know.
What about the Riverlands? Where's Edmure?
Where's the Blackfish?
I mean, Blackfish is dead. He died off screen. No trouble either. So,
oh my god!
Remember when it took Arya like 2 seasons to get to the Twins because everything was so war torn? She kept on getting like diverted.
But like, here's the problem: like, these armies are now completely meaningless because they just swell and shrink as needed. Yeah. They just pop into locations and dematerialize from them as needed. And we're supposed to seriously believe that like, Deadpan needs a ceasefire from Cheryl to be able to fight this White Walker threat, because otherwise she'll be at such a strategic disadvantage afterwards. Like, she still has the Dothraki, she still has the Unsullied, she still has 2 dragons.
No, but Cheryl there's nothing that Cheryl can't do with a ceasefire that she can do if Deadpan just ignores her. If she has a ceasefire and Deadpan goes off and, like, fights the others, then Cheryl can spend that time consolidating. If she ignores her, then she'll do exactly the same thing. So, yeah. Like, why is she putting all this effort into it?
I don't know. It doesn't make any sense.
It doesn't!
Yeah, and no one was actually trying to convince Cheryl to fight with them. Everyone will be
telling us, don't worry about it. Just worry about the story that's on the screen, right?
This, like, is
don't
the story! Worry about
the details. Exactly!
That's the problem, is that none of these inconsistencies, and people complain, you know, oh, you're nitpicking, or it doesn't matter, whatever. But these inconsistencies are what make the story not dramatic and not interesting. And
yeah, like, there were no stakes in this entire first half hour. Right.
It's sort of like why, you know, Jaime being knocked into the water wasn't worried, right? Because his plot armor is protecting him. There's no chance on this planet that he's going to die because he drowned in a river.
But, I mean, like, Kylie, remember when you talked about how when you were at a Feast for Crows, you had to read ahead to The Princess in the Tower because you were so, like,
anxious?
So anxious about what happened to this character that you've known for 2 chapters?
Yeah.
Like nothing, like even remotely like this happens in the show.
I
mean,
to be fair, I think my reaction to Arianne Martell is a little different than most people's.
Well, it doesn't matter. You had, like, that kind of reaction, and other people had that kind of reaction about other characters in that series. Like, remember how pissed off everybody was at the end of Feast for Crows where Arya wakes up and she's blind and we had to wait 6 years to find out what happened to her?
I didn't start reading until after Dance with Dragons was out, but yes.
Yeah.
I imagine that sucked.
Yeah, like, nobody is, like, lying in bed worrying about these characters.
Right, exactly.
No, these aren't characters.
Exactly.
Like, in this episode when I think Tyrion makes a comment in the dragon pit where he's like, we might die here or something, or someone else is like, I don't want to die here, and he's like, we might.
It's like, really?
It's like, no, you won't.
not in evidence, dude.
Well, because Cheryl is just so terrible, remember? She, like, kills people.
She was being super reasonable this whole time.
I know, just, what are they going for, that character?
The little switcheroos every minute. Okay, so she says, she's like, oh, wow, this white has convinced me I'm going to fight with you guys. And everyone acts like this is the biggest fucking deal. Uh-huh. And she says the only thing she requires is that John doesn't bend the knee to Danny, basically. She's not even asking for his allegiance. She just doesn't want him to get involved after this is done.
Yeah,
he's like, oh, I already put the knee, because he's a fucking idiot. So then she, like, storms off, like, the deal's off. And everyone tells John that they're fucked now. But they never were trying to convince Cheryl to fight in the first place.
Right, they just wanted a ceasefire.
I still don't understand why they need a ceasefire!
Also, if John had been like, oh, okay, I won't, like, if he had lied, then Cheryl had already sent Euron off, he was already getting the Golden Company, so she already had no intentions of living up to this.
It's like that whole thing with, like, Batfinger and the, like, the Purging Drop all over John.
Like, okay, she summoned Batfinger, but then she armed the Faith before he got there, and then, but she armed the Faith knowing that he could have provided Oliver, but only he could have provided, it's that whole thing all over.
If she knew about Oliver, there was literally no reason for her to summon Littlefinger. And
just,
yeah.
It's just so bad.
There was a flowchart. I'm sure you've all seen it.
We need a flowchart for this fucking idiocy.
Oh, man. Can we talk about, like, the I think it was the very opening scene when Bronn and Larry were, I guess, at King's Landing. So I actually, I watched the episode.
Like, not during the live block, I was all confused, but I thought they were at Casterly Castle.
Yeah, me too.
Because the walls look like the Casterly Castle.
Yeah.
Walls. Yes,
they did.
Yeah, you can see, like, the red
key. Like, the thing about Shiro's Landing is consistently, like, all the like, battlements are red, right?
Yeah, well, like, they pulled out, and you could see it was the red.
Yeah, you can
kind of
see
it
in the background.
But like, but before obvious. They pulled out, when it was just Bronn and Jaime talking about dicks or whatever.
Well, you know why I was confused? Because the Unsullied were there.
And exactly.
Oh, the Unsullied. It must be Casterly Castle. Then I was like, oh, well, how did they get outside
Casterly
Castle?
Why are they still outside Casterly Castle? Weren't they inside? Like,
Also, allow me a moment of bitterness, because obviously we're going to be talking about boat sex later, because you can't not talk about boat sex.
No, you can't not talk about boat sex. But boat sex is everything.
Let me take you back to a season, this season, a few episodes ago, when there was actually a really touching sex scene between two characters with a bit of a focus on female sexuality, in the case of Missandei and Grey Worm. And it was kind of, like, weighty and good, and they didn't even interact in this episode. They didn't get a reunion.
Oh, you're right.
She thought he was dead.
She was super low-key afraid that he, like, Missandei knows all about that personal and political stuff.
Okay,
great, I love her.
But, like, how do you have that, and they do that so well? It's seriously, like, someone just warped in and wrote that scene for them, and
Ronald
then
D. Moore, I think we speculated.
The Outlander showrunner. Just, like, popped in, was like, excuse me, can I add the scene? And they're like, oh, okay. We had minutes to kill, because we always do, so. Come on in. But I'm so mad about that. Instead we had to get the reunion of Tyrion and Pod and the dick joke that he has a magic cock. We get it.
Let's all suck on his magic cock. And like how many eunuch references in that opening scene in the Casterly Castle?
Oh my god, it's just
Sarah's
like Bronn.
Landing battlements.
Bronn's like, look at all these guys that don't have cocks. I have a cock. I wouldn't fight if I didn't have a cock. What do you think about cocks?
I like to use my cock in brothels. Did he mention that sex workers exist in this world?
Hey, Jaime, let's talk about cocks. How's your
cock doing?
Do you want
to hear my honeypot? Do you want to hear my honeypot for this?
Sure.
Uh-huh.
Remember how last year we realized that Bronn is hopelessly in love with Larry?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
This is still him trying to assert his, like, straightness and his masculinity.
Oh, absolutely. Bronn. Absolutely.
Oh, haha, they don't have cocks. I'm not interested in cocks. What? Who's talking about cocks a lot?
Exactly.
Larry, how's yours? Now the breakup finally happened, and seriously, only Larry and Bronn can mend my cherry void that is now there. Oh god. Is it even worth talking about, like, bullshit? Like, why was Sandor carrying the white basket?
Why is Sandor
by
such a, like, dick? Like, people say, like, hello to him and he tells him to fuck off. Like, remember when character development was a thing?
Yeah, and he just, like, what didn't he call everyone?
Wait, do people
find
it
this
funny?
Episode? I don't know.
It was like, what's in the box? Fuck you. Is that funny?
Did someone tell him that blue dude was Gregor?
Yeah, like, how do you know that? Like, he doesn't look
everybody
like
knows that. Everybody knows that's Gregor Clegane. Nobody cares.
What did we read that on the Westerosi Twitter? I was like, oh, shit.
So, Clegane Poll confirmed?
Oh, for sure.
Oh my god.
Was Sandor's whole, like, that's not how you die thing supposed to be, like, I'm gonna kill you?
Yep.
Yes.
Because what even is kinslaying, am I right?
Or character development.
I guess it's dead at this point. Although, you would think that, like, a living zombie being there and guarding Cheryl's corpse would have kind of put a damper on the look at this scary white thing.
That's what I was wondering. I'm like, isn't this kind of offensive? They're killing an undead in front of another undead. Well, that's not nice, guys.
He's hurting his feelings.
He's just trying to live his life. There are only two ways you can kill it. You can burn it. You could stab it with dragon glass. By the way, if that was the case, the episode before, Jess pointed this out in her review, which we'll link, but in the episode beforehand, when they're, like, shattering these whites, they would have, like, so many severed limbs coming after them.
Right. I mean, no, the rules about the whites have not remained consistent whatsoever. Yeah. Like, they've just been killing them, like, with swords. They're, like, regular. And it's
specifically,
like
in the books, it's specifically noted that, like, the dragon glass only kills others, not the whites.
Yeah.
Right. Because, like, Sam tried that and he broke his dragon glass dagger.
Right. The whites are impervious to fire. Not impervious. No, they're susceptible. Susceptible to fire. Yes. That's the word. Oh, God, this is just so... Okay,
and the others presumably aren't susceptible to fire? Who knows?
All right, so then Cheryl stalks off. I'm sorry, we're still going back to this.
Yeah.
Tyrion is like, fuck, I have to convince Cheryl for this truce.
Because it's... Okay, I guess we should just take it as a given that this truce is a thing that they need, okay? Just for the sake of our sanity.
Oh, wait, before she fucks off, though, when they're going to start the whole meeting and everyone's there, who's the first person that stands up to say words?
Oh, well, you literally, Deadpan, like, looks over to Tyrion and is like, well, you're gonna start...
Yeah, you're gonna start this meeting, Tyrion?
Did you bring a PowerPoint presentation?
And then Euron jumps in and is like, wildcard, bitches.
Rude! Well, first of all, Deadpan was late. Yeah. And Cheryl was like, you're late. And that's, like, all they interact.
Yeah, that was really weird. You've got two powerful queens and they don't talk at all. Well, Deadpan does tell her, I didn't believe it at first, but I just saw them.
How many? 100,000 at least.
You were really selling the terror. God, it like makes me want Euron back because at least he emoted. I don't know what the fuck he was saying.
He's having fun.
Because he's cosplaying Jack Sparrow. It's a good cosplay.
I'm going to go back to the Iron Islands. Reckon I'll be the only one alive at spring. Like, okay, dude. Well,
because you know the Army of the Dead can't swim.
Oh, No, I want to talk about the scene with Cheryl and Tyrion, though, because that's the scene where Cheryl is faking the whole thing, but she wants Tyrion to think that she's allying with them? Like, how do you fake ally with someone?
I don't know. The thing is, the scene with Tyrion and Cheryl was that the two actors are so good, and I think they did a really good job. But then if you listen to the words they're saying, the whole thing
Peter
is
Peter Dinklage has that whole, like talking while voice is breaking thing down to like an art is beautiful.
Yeah, yeah. And when he was able to do that here and Lena Headey was able to move all the muscles in her face and it was really nice. But it was just like the words.
Low bar, but okay. I mean, she's obviously a brilliant actor, but like moving all the muscles in her face, that's our bar right now.
Yeah, there's
one point about 3 minutes into this scene where I started to realize they were saying the same thing over and over again. Yeah. It was like, oh no, okay, they got broken. but you know what else this actually reminded me of is in tennis, basically you can play to the skill of your opponent or like a little bit better, but if your opponent can't hit with topspin, for instance, it's very difficult for you to always be generating the topspin. So what I realized, because I've been thinking that Dinklage just sucks as an actor for the past couple of years. No, he's fine. He's been acting off of deadpan. So you're just like, oh god, this is terrible. Why does he look like he's sleeping? Why is he, you know, just this? Everything about this is bad. But then when you stick him in a room with Lena Headey, they're just like both going at it. You're like, oh my god, I'm feeling something. What am I feeling?
Yeah, exactly.
I know because Conwell Hill is also a very good actor, but I don't know. I guess they just don't have chemistry.
Maybe, or maybe they just didn't really give Tyrion. I mean, Tyrion's scenes there were all about being right, and this he was showing remorse. He was,
which makes. All the sense.
Pleading. Cheryl wanted to trick him into thinking that she had an alliance with him because I guess no one would have noticed if, you know, she didn't. Like, what?
So, what was their conversation about? It was like, you killed everyone, you also killed my children even though you weren't around for their deaths.
No, well, he was responsible because he, like, made everything, like, he left them exposed by killing Tywin. And, like, I think Jess goes into some details, like, Tyrion makes it sound as if he was somehow forced to kill Tywin, not that he, like, specifically made a detour to do it.
Right. Yeah. Like, he could have easily...
And Varys was like, where the fuck are you going? And he was like, oh, I'm going over there to kill my dad. No.
Well, even in the show, he didn't really have much motivation to do it, because they dropped Tyshas.
Yeah, in the show, if I recall, he just kind of, like, he, like, said bye to Jaime, and then he, like, the next scene, he's, like, killing Shae, right?
Yeah, but Tysha had been dropped, so he didn't even have as much motivation. Not that it justifies killing his father.
No, it's because he was so upset that his father was sleeping with his girlfriend.
Right, I think that's how it was framed in the show.
Yeah. And, like, she totally betrayed him, you know?
So, dudes, this is what breaks Larry and Cheryl up.
Yeah.
And I'm sorry, but she was making good points. Like, what chance do they stand against this? And if they all... She said outright, our army's not going to make a difference. They have the Dothraki. They have the Unsullied. They have dragons. What is our army going to do at all?
Our army that in this scene is apparently very small.
That's what I was saying like 2 weeks ago. I was like, why do they need... And so she was saying this to Larry and she was, and making these points, and I'm sitting there watching TV like, yes, absolutely, Cheryl.
And then he's like, what are you going to do? She's like, I'm not going to just... do that and then let them turn around and crush me, which is what they would do because they're allied and she knows that now. So I've gone and spent money to get other people to fight for us. And he's like, oh, this is just too much.
Yeah.
I'm stunned.
He's shocked. And appalled.
She should care more about the fate of humanity with, like, dead people, I guess. But she also has a very valid point in all of this.
Mm-hmm. I mean, I think you can also think strategically, like, either way, whether... You know, if the living people triumph over the dead, then all she's dealing with is, like, the remnants of the living army. And vice versa, right? If the dead triumph over the living and then come south, then she's just dealing with the remnants of the dead army. Either way, they're going to severely weaken each other. Well, that's, I guess, the assumption.
Yeah, except the army of the dead doesn't quite work like that, but...
Well, no, but still, why put herself on the front lines?
Yeah.
I don't know. I found it compelling. I would have thought maybe a different reason for him to break up with her would have been, I don't know, that time she blew up an entire religious institution?
Yeah.
Or that time that she, like, slept with Lancel, or that time that she, like, did this whole, like, perjury trap thing, or the time that, like, the multiple times that she just called him an idiot and told him to go away.
Like, yeah, like, really any of it? But
the time that she framed their brother for murder. Like,
she blew up their uncle Kevin.
Yeah.
Poor Kevin.
I mean... Cheryl's big boob should have maybe had some repercussions. It looked like he was upset with her last season.
But then he wasn't. They never followed through on that shit. They do that all the time.
Yeah. Then he got
they did it for like three seasons in a row. And like, this is, okay. Oh, God. Better late than never, right? Just like the critics, speaking of.
Yeah, the critics who completely came back around to, oh, this was a great episode.
What? Like... What? I don't understand.
I mean, there's some people that are like, yeah, it still doesn't make any sense, but, I mean, come on.
Dragon. Okay, so what about it was worthy of, I mean, come on.
Dragon.
What about this episode was, oh, I mean, come on.
The end?
The dragon.
What, like, the Night's King riding a dragon? It looks so stupid.
Well, yeah, it did, but...
It wasn't the boat sex, or the wonderful exposition montage of boat sex.
Alright, well, let's first talk about the other scenes. So let's go to Dragonstone, including an entire scene devoted to the logistics of boat sex. That was really necessary. Like, we literally had to have a war planning meeting so we could figure out how to get John and Danny on a boat together.
I mean, like...
Yeah, and I'm a little
What was the plan? Like, she would fly to Winterhell, but I guess, like, she would do it in, like, a couple weeks. She would, like, chill on Dragonstone, so she's not, like, at Winterhell waiting for Jon to come with, like, Sansa. Just chilling.
I don't really get also, they ask all these questions about, like, well, if we go together, then we, like, appear like we're together or something. And I'm like, is that really, I mean, I guess, like, the Northern Lords are, like, wind veiny. We've established that. But, like, is that really gonna change everything? Like, if y'all ride up together, it's totally different than if she comes on her motherfucking dragon, like...
Also, he bent the knee to her. I feel like he needs to explain to his people first before she gets there.
No,
like,
he wrote a letter. It's fine.
Did Sansa have to present that to the Northern Lords? Did she have to be like, by the way, we're also now under Daenerys Targaryen, just to let everyone know, so that fucking idiot that you picked to be your king, just telling you that.
Yeah.
Oh my god. I'm also, thank god, Brienne was sent down to represent Sansa's interests.
She did so much. Such a good job.
She got to yell at Jaime.
She yelled at Jaime and she talked to the Hound. And I actually didn't mind her scene with the Hound, because they were like, oh, Arya's doing okay. Okay.
Is Arya doing okay?
Well, I mean...
she's alive.
Kids are alright.
Okay, so let's talk about John and Theon.
John and Theon. Like, do all
we
right.
have to? Okay, I guess we have to talk about it.
Yeah. Okay, so John forgives Theon for, like, killing Ned is kind of what it sounded like to me.
It was very strange. I didn't really get it. So, and I actually watched the episode twice, because I watched it once myself, and then Alex came home from work, and I watched it with her. And
oh,
both,
you poor thing.
I know. Both times...
You're, like, the best girlfriend ever, though. That's, like, true devotion.
Thank you. No, both times this scene, like, didn't... I don't understand a lot when watching this show, but I really don't understand. Wasn't the whole point of putting Sansa into Jane Poole's storyline to give Theon that redemption arc? Like, didn't they explicitly say that already?
Yeah, it was an Inside the episode where they talk about the great sin of Theon was doing this to the Starks, and that this is the way of, like, repaying it.
Right, so then why does he feel like he needs to apologize to Jon, of all people?
I guess because he fucked off to help Yara last year for no reason. And Chris, remember too, he said, like, oh, I can't come to the wall because Jon will kill me. And Sansa's like, no, I'll protect you. It'll be fine. He's like, no, I have to go. I have plot things to do. It's really bad. And yeah, that's what bothered me too, because basically every single, I don't want to say motivation, but every single rationality they used to justify that rape revenge arc was like, oh, okay, you know, like Theon had this moment with the Starks. Well, nope, that just went up in flames. Sansa's the key to the North. No, she wasn't at all. No, no one cared. They also had Rickon as a Stark prisoner. So there's literally no other reason to be there except for the fact that they felt Sansa needed that experience to become the strong woman she is now, so...
Yeah, they were using rape as drama, yeah.
Right, and it just gets more and more disgusting the more they retcon away any of those very feeble excuses.
Right. So yeah, I don't know, what did you guys... Did you guys feel any feelings when John and Theon were talking?
No. I mean, like, there was this whole thing where, like, I had to restart, like, my browser, because the live log was funny, and, like, when I restarted it, I had YouTube up in another tab, and it started, like, going off. And I had to, like, find the tab and, like, close it so I didn't have to, like, listen to CrossFit while I was trying to listen to the show. So I, like, missed half the scene. So, I don't
know. Oh, okay. Well, and thank you for that confession. Close more of your tabs.
No, I never close my tabs.
I know you don't. It drives me crazy. I know this. No, I mean, it was actually really nice to see Alfie Allen being given material. Like, I appreciated that aspect of it, but yeah, no, it didn't land for that reason for me, Caroline. And also, like, why is this coming now in season 7?
Yeah, seriously.
Why are we just being told how we should feel about how characters did in their arcs? Like, that's really...
How we should feel about, like, Theon's childhood as a hostage.
No, I was just gonna say, like, how does he feel? Because it wasn't really contextualized. It's just John being like, you should have loved my dad as more than yours. Like, oh, okay.
The one who was holding him hostage.
Okay. Yeah, like, he was a ward.
He wasn't a ward.
Well, yeah, that's the thing. You can't see me. I'm doing air quotes. He was a ward.
I can't see air quotes.
A ward.
I apologize. I should have put that more in my voice. He's a ward of Winterfell. yeah, so, I mean, yeah, it's just like, what? I don't know. And of all the people to also, like, talk about, like, what it means to be a Stark, like, John, really?
No, in the episode where it's explicitly stated that he's not a Stark.
Okay, yeah, let's talk about... Deal. No, because this happened in the pit scene, too, when, remember when Cersei's like, okay, I need Ned Stark's son to promise me this, and then...
We know things.
And he's like, oh, you know, I think you all think I'm dumb for not lying, but my father didn't lie, and he was honorable, and whatever. And it's like, no, dude... Your dad was willing to lie. That whole thing at the end when he got his head chopped off, he was lying.
I feel like D&D are, like, missing that whole thing about how he told that huge lie his entire life, and that lie was John. I don't feel like that's there at all.
Didn't Ned have a line in the books about, like, sometimes... He told Arya her lie was not without honor because she saved Nymeria's life.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, the whole, because they think, D&D think R plus L equals J is like, the shocking reveal, when really it's like no themes and characterization and shit.
But like, their Tower of Joy turned to ashes thing last year was all about how like Ned was a hypocrite, right? Like, what happened to that?
You know, I think they went to the Bravosi play, and that's their impression of Ned, and they just have, like, what's that mean? And also, they're making John seem like a fucking idiot. Like, his scene with Deadpan in the pit, we didn't really talk over, but they have, a sexual charge scene.
The warmest milk. It was like milk with, like, some kind of sedative mixed into it.
And she basically goes up to him, she's like, you're kind of an idiot.
But a sexy idiot.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, you're not just like
let's
queens.
Talk about how the dragons were really small.
I'm gonna hand you some bones. Weird. Check out these cool bones. This is not a metaphor.
This is a literal bone. I don't want to slip you any bones. Oh God. Okay, we have to talk about Theana and his toxic masculinity.
Oh my God.
Okay, so like let's just say this: like even if you don't have like a penis or testicles, it would still hurt to repeatedly get kicked in between the legs.
Especially when you're almost about to fall over.
Yeah, like, that, like it still hurts.
Hey, is this Rescue Yara mission gonna work?
Why not? I mean, it's the final season, right?
Okay. It'll work. It'll work.
Why is she still alive?
Why?
For this Rescue Yara mission, of course.
Because they couldn't think of anything for Theon to do in the last season.
Yeah.
Oh my God. I hate all of this. So he comes up to a group of, like, 11 people.
Mm-hmm. No, that's the Iron Fleet. And they have this plan to go, like, find an island that they can rape, basically.
Yeah, they're like, we're gonna go on vacation.
And he's like, no, we don't do that anymore because Yara made a deal with Deadpan. Mm-hmm. It's like, right, okay. Because she didn't want to reform it for herself, I remember now. And then this just random dude starts making fun of him and then wailing on him. And then he
calling
can't get
him Little Theon. Which, oh my God, what an incredible critique of Trump.
And then he can't get kicked in the balls, so he starts, like, so the tide turns of the fight and he kills him, I think.
Something like that. Or and then he, like, washes himself in the ocean in a super meaningful way.
Yeah, this was very, I think, Kylie, maybe you pointed this out in the live chat, this is just, like, the whole Jaime's golden hand stopping the sword thing, but, like, worse.
Worse.
I felt myself enraged, and I can't really articulate why.
Same. I had the same reaction.
I mean, it was all, like, they're always, like, implying that, like, you know, he was mutilated for a reason or something like that, and this
is the
reason.
I don't know, it just, God, something about it just really didn't sit right with me. It was really just totally off. I think especially because of how they've treated Theon's PTSD in the past.
Right.
As this, like, inconvenience, and then they've just, like, been making, you know, we had how many fucking eunuch jokes opening up the episode?
Oh my God. Yeah. What it reminds me of? It reminds me of Signs, the M. Night Shyamalan movie. How, like, in the climax, like, it's revealed that Mel Gibson's wife died so, like, he could figure out the aliens. Or something.
Dude, spoilers.
Remember that?
Yes, I do.
It's like reminds me of that. Like, seriously, that's a little tasteless.
It was incredibly tasteless.
It was more than tasteless, though. It was like disturbing. Yeah. Like I was watching it, and when that happened, I was like, "No, they can't really be going there." Yeah. It just—I don't know if it's because, like the idea of castration in like the modern world is sort of so foreign. Like I don't know any. You know, I don't. As far as I know, I don't know anybody who's suffered that. And I don't know if that's the distinction sort of between like someone who's like lost a hand, you know, someone who lost a hand. I know people like that and maybe that's more familiar or something. I don't know, but it's just, it just felt so bad and so unnecessary.
Mm-hmm.
Like the guy had to try to kick him in the ball. The guy who knows that he's been castrated, right? Because that's the big part of the discussion at the King's Moot.
I mean, yeah, that was like the number one argument against why he should be king.
Right, like this isn't the first time they've made fun of like, someone castrated. Even in this episode, this isn't the first time they've done it.
Right.
So and I don't not know, the first time they've implied that like life isn't worth living.
Right.
Right.
Like, I don't know why this landed so much worse for me, but it made me very viscerally uncomfortable to watch it. And like in an enraged kind of way.
And that like Theon would have to gain back the respect of his people by playing into this kind of toxic masculine thing.
Right. Maybe that's part of it, is that ultimately they were still, like, fisticuffs fighting.
Yeah, like I can fit into this paradigm despite my disability, not like, you know.
Not like this paradigm
is bad. My relationship to my disability exposes this paradigm as fundamentally unsound.
Right,
which is
exactly.
What the books are going for.
There's still bones there!
No, seriously, it hurts! Yeah. It would hurt.
Oh my fucking God. It wouldn't... Yeah. All right, Winterhell.
Uh-huh. Let's see what happened.
Here's where the twist twists even more.
Oh my god. Okay, Counselor Caroline.
Yeah, we've got a defense lawyer here, so
this was a very strange trial.
Okay, so first there was that scene with Sansa and Badfinger, and they're playing that worst case scenario game.
Okay, so
which question. I don't think that was a bad scene. Just like in isolation.
Well, it wasn't. I mean,
even Gilly's accent is doing all sorts of, like, wonderful things.
Okay, but did we need that? Because the conclusion is, Arya might want to kill me. Mm-hmm. Bitch, she told you she wanted to.
Yeah.
I mean, isn't that part of her playing into Littlefinger, right? So that I interpreted that as she plays the worst case scenario game, and then she's like, I need to put Arya on trial. Will you help me out, bro? And he's like, yeah, I'll stand at the wall where I always stand. Well,
I think what Littlefinger wanted was kind of like, because Sansa's kind of the point where she's just like, Arya's basically insane and she's dangerous, but I don't really have to take her seriously as a political threat. And Littlefinger was trying to get her to the point where, like, no, your sister's a political threat, therefore you should execute her, right?
Yeah.
Okay, if Sansa's already... Here's the question. Sansa was playing Littlefinger.
Was she playing him in this scene? Because I thought the point of the scene for Sansa's character was that she realizes that Littlefinger's been playing her this whole time. And then when she's, like, on the battlement staring off into the distance in the Sith Lord robe, she's just like, I gotta do something about this.
I mean, okay, right? I don't think she was playing him last episode when Arya was threatening to cut her face off in a room alone. I don't think that...
No, but then she goes and asks Littlefinger for advice with complete earnestness.
But I thought that her earnestness was the fake part, that she was... Because, like,
So you don't think she was earnest when she went to Littlefinger for advice last episode?
Right. So I think the only way this honeypot works, from what I'm seeing, is that...
No, fuck the honeypot. It's stupid.
Well, I mean, it's a
I'm talking about reality here.
Well, reality.
You mean reality? Possibilities. Yeah.
I'm talking about the actual text.
Well, I think what they're trying to imply is that, because we see Sansa and Littlefinger with a few scenes in the very beginning of the season where she's like, you know, oh, I'm sure it's going to be clever, lol, and then like rolls away out of there. And then suddenly we get this switch where she's like talking to him for advice. And
yeah, so when D&D
that's
start
the
writing.
Point. Like, that's the point at which she's beginning to play him, when she's like pretending to care about his advice.
Boy, she really dragged it out.
I mean, she didn't need to do any of this because she could have brought him to trial in the first place.
It's not like she needs to lull him into a false sense of security.
Right. Like, he's literally trapped
in with
her. I
mean, like, he has absolutely no control over the Veil Lords, it turns out. Like, zero. She didn't do anything to convince the Veil Lords of his duplicity. Like,
she just wanted
they just
us
accepted
to be
it.
As dramatically satisfied as possible.
She read the script and knew what had to happen later.
No, I think that scene with the game, with the worst case scenario, was her supposed to be realizing what was going on, finally. Because she's a really slow learner, remember?
But she is a learner.
I don't know. Because then what else explains the sudden turn to her earnestly getting
the
advice
right? The fact that Brian Cogman wasn't writing anymore and D&D were writing now? I don't know.
That could explain.
You are mixing your Watsonian and Doyleist analysis, my dear.
Welcome to Game of Thrones.
I mean, here's the way I see it. Okay. None of this works. It doesn't matter how we want to pretend she was doing anything. None of this works. Because either she had made that switch to earnestly ask for his advice and then kept it up just so she could, see how far Arya was willing to go? See how far Arya was gone? And then at some point was like, don't worry, Arya, it's cool, we're gonna kill him together. And then, like, expected to skip off with Arya into the sunset. Or she made the switch in that scene, and then she just started earnestly going to Littlefinger for advice, and then we still have the issue of the off-screen logistics of Bran Bott figuring out the key testimony for her, of telling Arya, and then becoming cool about it, because Arya wasn't surprised in the trial scene. So it's like,
I think that's just because she's like out deadpanning deadpan now.
No, she knew Littlefinger was getting called. It seemed like it.
Yeah, I think she was in on it. Because she turns and she says, like, my sister asked you a question or something like that.
Yeah, it's almost as bad as that time Carol looked over at Tommen during the perjury trial and was like, oh, the good part's coming up.
I mean, we all know how that turned out. There was a flowchart.
Yes. A steaming pile of shit. I could make a flowchart for this. It's not going
to
help.
No, it didn't help in Carol's Landing either, so I don't expect it to help here.
Okay, my question about this is, they've been doing a lot of these, like, what a twist kind of things. And without any kind of indication that this twist is coming.
No, they did that at the end of season 5 with Marcella's death. That's still the most egregious example.
But that's what makes it the twist.
But can't you twist in a twisty way that isn't just, like, completely out of fucking nowhere? Like, the Red Wedding was a
twist. Does George R. Martin have anything to say about this?
Yeah.
Here's where the twist twists even more. Mm-hmm. Okay. Was Arya and Sansa's conversation last episode with Ned Stark and then Arya shaming Sansa's dress choices, was that legit?
Yes! No, there's no way that situation was stayed like that. No, like, of course it was legit. Like, I won't accept any other explanation because that's just stupid.
Yeah.
So, what is with Arya suddenly being cool with all of this? Just because she murdered Littlefinger? Is it because it's really her fault? All the blame is on Littlefinger, so therefore Sansa's free of everything?
I mean, that's a good point. The explanation that I originally provided, which is this is dumb.
Right, but like, if I'm Sansa, I'm still locking my doors at night with Arya running around, you know what I mean?
Can we talk about Arya? Okay, so, like, remember when we had the Sansa Stark construct last year? Like, we have, like, there's at least two Aryas. There's Arya, who might possibly be the asshole, and then there's Happy Ed Sheeran fan Arya, right?
So there's Arya and there's Maisie Williams.
Yeah, and she seems to, like, vacillate between these two.
Yep.
Just, like, without any kind of, like, warning. Mm-hmm. And, like, you know, like they have her in that, like, Bravosi outfit, you know, like, that Bravosi cut jacket thing that she's still walking around in, and she's, like, standing with her hands behind her back all the time.
Yeah.
And, like, totally channeling the asshole.
Yep.
And then all of a sudden she's, like, smiling, and, like, you know, her body language is all loose, and, like, it's like she's listening to her favorite Ed Sheeran song, right?
Yeah, because it's just Maisie Williams chilling
out. It's just Maisie Williams chilling out with Sophie Turner. And, like, there's no rhyme or reason to which Arya we get.
And this isn't even evocative of the Arya of last year, because I can totally buy,
I mean,
like,
it's evocative of Arya in that one scene that confused us so much and had people earnestly thinking that it was the asshole wearing her face.
What do you care?
Yeah, that's the scene that she's playing off for this whole season, unless she's listening to Ed Sheeran.
And what strikes me is that, remember last year, she formed an empathetic connection with Lady Crane?
Yeah. Last year she was doing this exact same thing. That was Ed Sheeran and Arya.
Yeah, but, like,
I mean,
wouldn't that be the face you have for your sister?
Unless you're threatening to kill her.
But she was never even, like, warm to her at the start. She was always like this.
Just, like, the limit of Maisie Williams' range, or?
It's gotta be the writing.
It's the writing.
The writing?
Yeah, because, I mean, the writing put them in that situation. Though, the whole thing doesn't make sense. I think the conclusion is that there's no way to make any inverse sense of this.
We're going to try with retrospective, Kylie and I. Don't worry. We'll try. There will be a flowchart, I promise.
But it just really, and I think, you know, even casual viewers or people that love the show are catching on to, like, that it's just so fucking weird. And it's because there is no internal logic to it.
Yeah, like, the Arya that people fell in love with was, like, you know, that lovable scamp in season 1 who, like, was learning how to sword fight.
Yeah, this is not a scamp.
Yeah, I don't know what the fuck she is. She's, like, an asshole cosplayer.
Yeah, I mean, the asshole Pawnee Pot is still really compelling to me.
Yeah. I would love it if she was the waif. Last shot of the whole series, Arya taking off her face, she's the waif. Boom.
Because it explains so many things, like why Nymeria was not into this, why Hot Pie was like, what happened to you?
Yeah.
She's like, oh, something wrong? Am I not doing Arya right? Ooh, I love Ed Sheeran. Like, Ed Sheeran, sorry, I'm pronouncing it wrong. But no, I honestly don't understand what they're going for and who is supposed to find this compelling. And you know what I hate about this show so much?
Everything.
Is that...
Yeah, that's too open-ended of a question.
Is that it is so bad all the time and so negative between two women that even knowing how bullshit everything is, seeing Sansa and Arya be vaguely nice to each other in that final scene was still like, oh, yay, for me. Yeah. That's how exciting that is.
Well, okay, good for you, I guess. I don't think I could feel that way, but...
Well, not quite as earnestly or enthusiastically as I described it, but yeah, like, the idea, there was a part of me that was happy to see that.
Yeah. No, I feel that.
Even though even though it was contextualized by since but like you're still a pain and you like Dawn better or whatever it is she said to
she's like you're thing, still weird know. And creepy and you might kill me in my sleep, I don't know.
Haha, we're cool, yeah. Except are you gonna stab me? Don't stab me. Ha ha ha. You know who else we have to talk about?
Bran.
Wait, can I talk about the trial of Littlefinger?
Oh, yes. Yes,
it makes
please.
Me very excited. So,
okay, so spectral evidence is not a thing, right? You're not allowed to do that.
Well, so here's the thing. His spectral evidence would be admissible in, and I believe this is what happened. Bran quoted something Littlefinger said, right? He's like, you told my mother this was someone's dagger or something like that.
It's kind of like security tape footage?
Well, the thing is, it's a quote from the defendant. So if you have someone testifying, they can testify to something the defendant said. It's a party opponent exception to the hearsay rule. And because normally you can't go into court and just say, like, yeah, he totally said XYZ thing. But people can come in and say things that the defendant said, because stuff reasons. So that would probably be acceptable. And I think Arya...
No, but Bran wasn't present when he said the thing.
It doesn't really... Well, he was, right? Because he could watch it. So that would be the question,
but that's spectral.
Right? Well, is it...
Demons telling, like, Abigail Williams or whatever.
It might be hearsay within hearsay, but, yeah. I mean, spectral... The thing is, it's not really spectral because he's a witness to it. Because he would have been able to go back and watch it. So he would have, like, he personally heard it. It's not like someone else told him.
Yeah, but there's no way for anyone to verify any, like, he could have been just making shit up.
That's the big issue. That's the big issue, is that there really is no way for anyone to
verify that he has a way to access that information at all.
Okay, have these northern lords been told, by the way, the reason that Bran is not running Winterfell is because he's the three-eyed raven?
Yes. It's complicated, but...
And do they just all shrug and say, I don't know what that means, but then ignore it?
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay, yeah. Just checking. And here's the other oddity. Now, I don't know much about trials, but Sansa, to my knowledge, didn't even speak a sentence. She just kind of nodded at Arya.
They also didn't give Littlefinger the chance to defend himself at all.
Like, at all?
And they didn't give him the option of a trial by combat. It wasn't a trial. It was really just an execution.
Yeah.
It was just Sansa
decided
to execute
him. When he was kind of just like, hey, I want to defend myself, he goes and he, like, orders Royce to take him out of there. Like, that's not defending yourself, dude. But okay.
Yeah.
Well, at least Royce was dressed for the job.
I love when Littlefinger opens with, none of you know, you weren't there. It's like, oh, that's real convincing. God. Real convincing, bro.
also, did Bran oversee him poisoning Robin off screen?
Is Robin dead?
They mentioned Tears of Lys. Who did he kill with Tears of Lys?
Jon Arryn.
Jon, yeah.
Is that who they mentioned, or did they mention Robin?
No, they mentioned Jon Arryn. Lysa to kill Jon Arryn.
So Robin's still around, we just don't know where.
I think it was Sansa who said, you convinced...
And then,
see, something
like
that...
They go through the entire, like, season... They go through the entire book one thing, where, like, he has Lysa poison Jon Arryn, and then send the letter to Catelyn, and then do the whole thing with the dagger.
Because Bran rewatched season one.
Yeah. Yeah, there's other things like that that would have...
Like, Sansa mentioned, like, all of that, the whole thing.
Oh, yeah, like, Sansa wouldn't be able to testify that he convinced her to do the Tears of Lys thing.
There was something where... Oh, it was Dany. And she said, I'm sorry, this is going back, she said that the witch who killed her husband told her she was infertile, except that didn't happen.
That
was,
it didn't happen
that's
in the show.
Hilarious, yeah, that's
drives me bananas.
Line in isolation. Oh. Like, who told you that? The witch who murdered my husband? That's hilarious.
Yeah, no, sorry, I'm thinking of characters who have obviously rewatched, you know, season one or reread A Game of Thrones or something like that.
Yeah.
Oh, this is not a good trial. Mistrial. I declare mistrial.
Definitely. And my other question is this honorable? Because isn't it like the person who gives a sentence should swing the sword, right? And Sansa didn't even give this guy a fair trial at all. And then she has her little sister go over and like knife him in the throat. And everyone's cool and just standing there watching him bleed out on the floor. Like, is this Northern Honor right now? Like, this is what we do?
Could they have, like, done this outside, too?
Seriously, I'm just thinking of the poor chambermaid who has to clean the floor now.
It's framed. I mean, it's more honorable than her kill of Ramsay, I guess. But it's framed revengey, so yeah. I don't know.
Is it framed revengey? I wouldn't say I don't know what it is, but like, I don't think it's coherent enough to be framed as anything.
Yeah, I don't know if it's revengey. I don't know,
man. Yeah.
Because she has great points, like, she has a lot of evidence, but it's, like, carried out.
No, the amount of evidence she has is embarrassing. It just, like, begs the question, I know I'm using that term incorrectly, but it begs the question of, like, why she didn't do this 2 seasons ago.
Or why she didn't do this at the start of the season. Right. Because they knew that we needed this moment of us thinking that Arya's getting called for treason, but it wasn't Arya.
Like, why didn't
this was all constructed around.
Yeah.
Why didn't she do
backwards
this?
Backwards fucking writing!
She really could have done this right away. I don't know.
Alright, Brambot.
Brambot, he's the three-eyed. So I'd like to point out, Brambot, when Sans is like, I don't know what three-eyed raven means, he's like, it's complicated. But when Sam's like, I don't know what that means, he's like, let me explain it in 2 sentences.
Okay, so, like, remember at the end of season 5, we were, like, laughing about how Sam and Gilly were just going to, like, show up at Horn Hill, having gone across all of Westeros by land through, like, all these, like, several wars without any problem. That actually happened in the reverse direction.
Yep. He just saunters into Winterhell. This scene, is this the worst exposition that they've written on the show?
I don't think, they have some competition, I think, but it was pretty bad.
I mean, the Tower of Joy was pretty bad. That's my father.
That's my father. That was bad. You know, the Tyrion narrating the Casterly Rock attack was pretty bad. The
Casterly Castle attack?
Casterly Castle attack. they basically didn't even have any prodding. Yeah. Because Sam said, I'm here because I guess I figured I'd help John instead of cleaning chamber pots.
Oh, and by the way, my girlfriend figured out that he's, like, not a bastard. And Bran is confused about how the bastard naming conventions work because they're not, like, last names that are on their birth certificates. So that's not how it works. But, like, no, John's not a Sand just because he was born in Dorne.
Bran opens with this. All Sam says is, I'm here to help John. And then Bran just starts talking about who John's actual parents are.
And then, if he's omniscient, how doesn't he know that they were married? I'm so confused.
Right? How does he not know about the annulment? That's the thing. It's like, it's blowing my mind. It's like, I know all this shit, except I happen to not watch that one Starcomb video where...
Well, and then Sam says, hey, could you put that on?
Yeah, Let's watch this. Can you go check that out real quick?
Let's watch this together with the audience. Is that a Viserys cosplayer? Are they in Dorne? That doesn't look like Dorne.
Well, Dorne is very physically diverse. Okay.
Okay, okay.
They have woods and streams in Dorne.
Babe, this looked like it was, you know, fucking Rivendell.
Yeah, it looked remarkably like Rivendell, actually.
Let's take a minute.
And the Septon who, like, came into the middle of nowhere to annul, like, the heir to the Iron Throne's marriage and marry him to somebody else.
I posed this question on my Tumblr. I'll pose it here. If a Septon marries in the woods and no one is around to hear it, is it legally binding?
Well, no, because, like marriage in Westeros is all about, like, witnesses.
You need witnesses! Even here in America, you need witnesses!
Yeah, like, you need witnesses, like... Like, they have an entire ceremony where they, like, strip you naked in front of people so that they can make sure that you consummate the marriage. Like,
this is the prince!
This is, like, and he just disinherited his 2 children.
One of whom is already named Dagon.
What a jerk! I mean, this is, like, with the whole, like, Watsonian Doylist analysis thing. Like, what's the point of Watsonian analysis? Because Rhaegar's just a giant jerk.
All these critics are like, oh my god, this confirms who John's parents are. Did you not see the baby crossfade last year?
Yeah, really. It's like, I don't know why they think this
no,
is
that's
still a shot.
No, that's because they all thought he was an incest baby.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
Oh, right, because they didn't read HBO's flowchart because it was so badly done.
Can we talk about the appearance of Rhaegar, who's supposed to be like... This, like...
Harry Lloyd?
No, was it actually Harry Lloyd, seriously?
No, it wasn't.
But he looked just like him. They used the... I swear to God, they used the same wig.
They used the same
wig. Like, come on.
And the same costume, as far as I can tell.
He's supposed to be the fucking crown prince. He's supposed to be, like, really beautiful and handsome and shit. That was, like, part of the whole thing, was, like, he was really attractive.
Well, Viserys was supposed to be really good-looking, too.
Lyanna liked
Harry Lloyd's good-looking.
I thought Danny sees... Rhaegar in the House of the Undying, and for a second she thinks it's Viserys in the books.
Yeah, but then she notices that he's much softer and his eyes are a different color and his hair is longer. Yeah. And
he should be fucking Legolas. That's what he should look
right,
like.
Right, exactly. He's like, he was supposed to be like really graceful and all this. So, I don't know. They were just like lazy.
Well, like, Rhaegar was really a giant nerd. So.
I'm just disappointed in the costume.
Rhaegar was a giant nerd.
Yeah, he is a giant nerd. He's a giant sulky nerd.
And
but,
also really.
But this is Rhaegar, really, and Rhaegar is a Viserys cosplayer.
I mean, no, like Book Rhaegar is not a good husband by any stretch of the imagination, but, like, this just takes it to, like, such a level.
But,
and we've got...
In real life, I have met Rhaegar cosplayers, like, real-life Rhaegar cosplayers who did a better job than this.
Like, oh, I'm sure of it. I'm sure of it.
People that have made, like, the dragon crest in, like, little stones, like, rubies on, like, fake armor and spent, like, 300 hours doing. Like, I've met those people and they did a better job than these supposed professionals over on this goddamn show.
Why is Brad happier to see Sam than his siblings? I'm so confused by this whole thing.
They can nerd out together. We just want
and they can watch VHSs together.
Yeah.
Oh my god. Maybe Sam's gonna be the next three-eyed raven.
Why not?
And then we have this fucking horrible voiceover of like, he didn't kidnap her at all. He loved her. And then, boom, boat
well,
back
if he loved her.
Well, if he loved her. And fucking 15-year-old Lyanna. Okay, this is fine.
Yeah.
Well, that's the thing. I was sort of struggling. So he says, he didn't kidnap her. He loved her and she loved him back or something like that. But I feel like it really should have been contextualized in the opposite way. Like, she wasn't kidnapped. She went with him. She loved him. Like, it should have been about her. Because
yeah, that's a very good point.
No one's ever questioned. No one's ever questioned.
How does Lyanna feel? Said nobody ever. Yeah.
Right. So it's like he should have, it really should have been contextualized from her point of view.
That's an excellent point.
Yeah. Of course. Okay, this is intercut with the amazing boat sex.
It was
between
so awkward.
John and Danny.
Was
the real
the filming
boat sex
awkward?
Is the friends they made along the way.
The real boat sex was the friends we made along the way.
I'm sorry, like an Anand sent that to Kylie's mailbox today, and she just, like, you know, sent it to me. And, like, all day, it just, like, it popped into my mind, and it just started laughing spontaneously out loud. I don't know what about it is so fucking hilarious.
It's perfect.
I think
the
it's
real
really...
boat sex is the friends they made along the way.
But, like, here's the thing about boat sex. I kind of expected, I don't know, John and Danny to maybe talk before.
Right. Well, I mean, he handed her a bone in the dragon pit, so.
He literally just knocked on her door. They kind of were like, oh, yeah, I could fuck. And then the next scene is them fucking. But it's like... They're just they lie and they roll over while there's very nice music playing and
like John
is
at home
being
when
in
he
love.
Looks at her. Remember that?
They stare at each other awkwardly. I don't know. I found like actually my actual initial reaction when like the shot first opened with the two of them naked on the bed. I literally out loud said "ew" because I just I felt it was so weird. It was so awkwardly shot. It was like such a weird angle. They were like clearly trying to like cover their like private parts for no apparent reason, but like, they were like. We're HBO, so we're going to show nudity, except we're not going to show really any nudity whatsoever.
We said our actors don't want us to, so we're going to, like, have our cake and eat it too.
Right.
Right, it's Kit Harington and Emilia Clarke, so we have to be a little more, like, you know.
And they just, like, very suddenly were naked on the bed, and there was, like, no, there was not, no, like, not even, like, Robin Talisa level.
But hey,
like,
don't you know Johnny's
the
heir to the Iron Throne?
Yeah, Robin Talisa was hotter?
Yeah, they did that. They actually, I think, I hate Talisa. Expressed this many times.
Yeah, but Kylie has a thing for Una Chaplin.
Yeah, but that's nothing that has dilly squat to do with Talisa.
I hate the Talisa character, but
oh, God,
they definitely had sexual tension, and their initial hookup scene was...
it was good. Earned!
Yeah, exactly, and that's the thing, like, these people haven't spoken to each other.
Frankly, even outside of this episode, they really haven't had that much interaction. They had the cave scene, they had,
No, they've had more scenes of people telling them that they're in love than of them actually interacting.
Right. And then we have to have a voiceover about how they're in love as they're having sex, just to sell that this is a romantic moment.
And what was with Tyrion standing in the hallway?
Oh, that was so weird.
He's like,
he was jealous or concerned?
The look on his face was seriously like, we have a long boat trip, they promised me we'd play Scrabble tonight, now they're fucking instead. Like, what is he doing there? Why is he lurking?
Why does this have to be contextualized by him at all?
What's he eating?
What does he have to do with this?
okay, John's the rightful heir. That was another part of this.
Yeah.
Hasn't Deadpan been talking about breaking the fucking wheel this whole time?
As long as she's the dictator.
Also, I'm calling bullshit on this, the legality of this marriage and the legality of the annulment by this, like, probably drunk Septim.
Of course, but, like, I think we have to take that as a given if we want to do any Watsonian analysis is the problem. It's stupid, and it breaks the entire show at this point, but we just have to accept it, I think.
I don't accept it.
I mean, we've already accepted that the show is broken.
It really...
I don't.
So we gotta have, like, different registers, right? We gotta have different registers of analysis to where we accept different premises.
Oh my god, this is so bad! Okay, the wall falls, then the episode ends.
And they killed Beardy.
Did he die?
My favorite character, I think.
No, I don't think he died.
Did he run far enough that he, like, got off the collapsing section?
I mean, if he died and Beric died and they didn't show it to us, that's really cheap.
Yeah.
But, like, that would be gratuitous, Kylie. They've suffered enough.
I guess we'll know if they just, like, don't show up next year. But, okay.
So, I have words about Viserion, resurrected Viserion. He's got giant holes.
Wait, Viserion?
Yeah. He's got giant holes in his wings. So how the hell is he flying?
That's not very aerodynamic.
That's not aerodynamic. and I won a bet because I bet somebody at my job $20 that he would breathe blue fire. And he did.
But
so I was glad with that.
Is it like $20 with Andrew Jackson still on it? Have they changed that yet? Or are they still just talking about it?
I don't know.
I think he's still hanging around, dude.
Yeah.
I don't think they're changing it.
Yeah.
But I'm going to try to collect on that bet tomorrow. See if it works. I mean, it was fine. The whole scene was like, it was like...
Yeah, it was fine.
Action, whatever. I mean, I guess there's no magic in the wall now. I don't know.
No, but I think, like, the dragon fire would have broken the magic, right? Like, I can accept that.
Julia's very generous about this whole thing. I don't get why. I don't think any of it works, but...
No, like, I can accept that, like, because, like, there's clearly that kind of dichotomy between the dragons and the others, that, like, a dragon and its fire could break the magic of the law. I think that's within the rules of the system.
But then how did an other raise a dragon that can do this?
Yeah, and isn't it quite a bit of a liability to be, like, leading the army of the undead with a dragon that breathes fire and fire kills your army? I feel like that's, like... That's
yeah, like, but, like, a gun can kill your army, too, and people carry guns. I don't know.
But, like, not in as mass a way as, like, a...
I suppose.
Missing no, you're, dragon.
I honestly don't know why I wasn't prepared for this, but I wasn't prepared for Shogun being a dragon rider.
No, what, you didn't see that fan-made poster that's become reality?
Oh my god. Like, I didn't think Viserion would have a rider as a white or a zombie or whatever the fuck he is.
Yeah, we still, there's no answer to that question that we had of whether he's a white or whether he's an other dragon.
He's just, he exists, ice dragon, blue fire, wall gone. Cool.
I don't know, next season we're gonna have some great, like, Zuko Azula firefights.
So. That's what I was thinking. Yeah. Maybe we can, take it if we can get the soundtrack from Last Agni Kai. That was
beautiful. I mentioned this in the live vlog, but where are all the female whites?
Where's, like, Smurfette at?
Is their imagination so limited that they can't even picture female zombies in an army of the dead?
Yeah. Yep. Or children zombies. I mean, like, we're talking about all the people that have died north of the wall in the past how many thousands of years?
They used to have them.
I mean, they had them for Smurfette.
They did. But they had him, you know, the first scene of the show. They had a child.
Yeah.
A little girl, actually. Yep.
Now, like,
I don't know.
Maybe it's because, like, I didn't look closely enough, but, like, I shouldn't have to look closely. Like, half of them should be women.
I'm super, super, super desensitized to any fear that these evoke.
Oh, seriously. No, like...
Yeah.
Like, remember in the white... Like, that was last week with, like, Bob, the other who was leading the Dig Dig Squad. Like, oh, that was ridiculous. There's, like, nothing terrifying about him at all.
Bob the other,
I am a fucking wimp. Like, I have trouble with Shaun of the Dead. I don't do well with any scary stuff. I actually even found the beginning of Hard Home a little bit like, okay, I can feel my anxiety going up because they did that, like, you know, all the wildling feces disappeared at the door and the mist and all that stuff. And then the skeletons came and that broke that. But, like... This is so... They're just people tromping around now. Okay, they're just generic bads. It's just like the Uruk-hai.
Mm-hmm.
There's not an extra fear. It's just kind of like, okay, kill the bads.
I mean, the Uruk-hai were really pretty effective when those movies first came out.
Well, yeah, I agree. Mm-hmm. But I'm saying that there's nothing like... There's nothing especially horrifying about the dead aspect
anymore. Well, the thing about it is I find zombies sort of in video games and movies and whatever sort of have this effect. If you have a horde of zombies, it's not particularly scary. But if you have one zombie somewhere in the room and you can hear it moaning, that's terrifying.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
Like, that's like the more.
That's a good point. The one zombie we had in the pit scene wasn't all that. Like, I know something about that particular light was just like, maybe it was like the sad little sounds it was making. Like, I more like pitied it than anything else.
Yeah.
Oh, the
it was so yeah. far from home.
Yeah.
They tried really hard to make it really scary.
Did they?
Well, yeah. Lena Headey acted her face off there. That was great. She seemed really terrified.
I mean, her bodyguard
she was also like, acting. It was a double act.
Just not, like, yeah, like, Kylie, your point about, like, zombie Gregor being right there and how this, like, completely undermines everything is very well taken, yeah. I think.
I know. All right, like, I don't think there's much more to say about the episode itself. Yeah. We're kind of at the time, too, but is there any general comments you want to make about the season?
What a waste of time.
There was so much wheel spinning.
I didn't think that the pacing could be worse than season 6.
Right, but then
like,
it is.
Anything ever. But how, like, why is this episode 80 minutes? Why were a bunch of episodes beginning of the season barely 50 minutes? Like, what are they doing?
And what's funny is that all the critics say that the season was rushed. It's like, that's, honestly, guys, that's not the issue with this. The issue is that they are up against not having enough story to tell or a story they even care about telling at this point.
Right. So then, as we predicted, no consequences for Tyrion for his bad plans.
We have to talk about the spoilers and how they were 99.9% correct.
Right. There's no Cheryl miscarriage.
Yeah. And that's, I suspect, like, because those spoilers are so fucking reliable, I suspect they cut something at the last moment.
I wouldn't be surprised if she miscarries next season. Because I don't think she's going to serve.
I don't think there's going to be a baby.
I don't think she's going to survive the show, and I don't think that they would kill her pregnant. So, I
think they would. They stabbed Talisa in the uterus.
Yeah, but that's.
Yeah, but they didn't like Talisa.
Nobody liked her.
In love with Cersei, you know. I don't know. I don't know. But I actually now, I'm not sure she's going to die in the show. I was, like, certain of it before, and now I'm sort of like, you know what? I could see them, like, shenaniganing her somewhere and leaving her alive.
I think they're still going to have Jaime kill her. I do. It's going to be stupid and unmotivated when it happens, but I think it's going to happen. I don't know how.
It's going to make me so mad.
I don't know why.
However it happens, it'll make me so mad.
Mm. I mean, yeah. Like, what was the point of making her pregnant in the first place, seriously?
Because then it's supposed to... Because then she could use it as part of a bluff so Tyrion thinks that she's coming. I don't know.
So yeah,
a dynasty for ourselves.
So, yeah, I mean, Tyrion was rewarded for all his stupidity, and...
Was he? He seemed pretty sad at the end there.
No, but...
He didn't get to play Scrabble.
He ruined all of the Tyrells and all of the Dornish, all of them. Mm-hmm. Were killed because of... Who's in Dorne? Who's in Dorne right now?
Manfrey.
Yeah, little Doria Sand is ruling Dorne now.
I'm totally fine with all that. Yeah. I have no idea. Who's in the Reach?
I don't know. One of Larry's stooges, I guess.
You know what? Like, I have a feeling... So basically season 8, it's 6 episodes. I'm pretty sure it's going to be all battle.
It's 6 episodes? You know.
Yeah.
You think it's gonna be all what?
All battle.
It's gonna it's gonna be barely watchable, is what it's gonna be.
Yeah, well, of course, it's gonna be that too. But I'm saying, you know, I think we're gonna look back on season 7 and be like, they didn't really need this,
mm-hmm. Right?
Because this was just a stalling pattern. It was like deadpan came. Oh, she's too overpowered. How do we not get this fight to happen?
Yeah,
let's just randomly chuck armies at Cheryl.
And what was the point of anything that happened in Winterfell?
I don't know. They could have totally cut the whole Winterfell thing.
Littlefinger's death, are you not satisfied?
They could have killed him in the Battle of the Bastards.
I would have seriously watched any other subplot. Like, Arya teaching Sansa how to make people pies. I would have taken that as a subplot over anything. Like, here's how we survive the winter. Grind them up. Seriously. Yeah.
No, I would have taken that over what we got. The Winterfell plot was really, really bad. It was just really, like...
No, it was so, like superfluous and just shoved in there because they're like, well, we can't do nothing with them. And you know what was even... Okay, there was something... We haven't even mentioned it. Remember how Sam had an arc this year?
Oh my god. Fuck this shit, I'm out, that arc?
Yeah.
Yep.
Well, he doesn't want to read about the lives of better men.
Fuck everything! Okay, I'm not over
that.
Oh my
Caroline, yeah. Please don't pick at that scab.
God, guys, we've come a long way, though. It seems like only yesterday there was a foreign invasion underway.
Oh, man.
I can't.
Oh, boy. Okay. All right. I think that does it for our show for today. We're definitely going to be having more about Game of Thrones Season 7, so we're going to be having somehow the Carol Awards on this channel. We haven't figured out exactly what that format's going to be.
And we haven't figured out if we're going to do that before or after our next kind of decompressed inbox hour thing.
Yeah, I think Julie and I just need to... We've also got a couple of guests line up. If anyone watches Danzy Reviews, she has graciously agreed to let us onto her channel for some reason to talk about Dorne. I don't think she knows what she's getting.
Oh, God.
In exchange, we might have to talk about some Baratheons with her over here. So we'll see how that goes. And we've also got just like a bunch of other A Song of Ice and Fire episodes we've got to get through. And we have until 2019 for these retrospectives. So we don't have to, you know, compress them all together. So this.
But we might want to get them the fuck over with. We'll see.
Yeah. So hopefully this will be a nice, fun feed for a while. Good combination of book and show stuff. Have yeah, different we have guests a lot
of,
on.
We have a lot of book only kind of ideas that we want to get to.
Yeah, exactly. And yeah, so you'll have all that to look forward to. I think the first thing, Julia, you and I need to do is update the Book Snob Glossary.
Yes. No, the first thing we have to do is, like, profusely thank Caroline for coming on this journey with us.
Oh, absolutely.
thank you for having me. I've been a huge nerdy fan of yours for a very long time, so it was awesome.
Well, we're a huge nerdy fan of you.
Yay. Well, and Carol, and this is not the last you guys are going to be hearing from Caroline.
Yay.
Have her on. Yeah, if nothing else, we need to have a full episode on Cheryl's battle cardigan.
Oh my god. We didn't talk about her battle cardigan. Oh no.
We didn't talk about her battle cardigan. Available for $49.99 at Macy's. No.
Oh, I'm gonna write.
I mean,
a piece.
She's upscale. Like, last week on Quite Sure It Was Forever 21.
I mean, look, I would totally wear this to work, no lie.
I'm going to write a costume. My next costume piece is going to be about the costumes of season 7. Because I have a lot of feelings about a lot of things. So
I'm so excited. I'm actually going to probably indulge a little bit and write a piece on boat sex for this week. Because it was that bad.
Boat sex!
Do it.
I'll see if I can crank it out. But my joy turned to ash in my mouth when I realized that's all we were getting.
Are you going to title the article, The Real Boat Sex is the Friends They Made Along the Way?
Oh my god, I should.
That's too long.
Wow.
As your editor. That's too long.
I think I was going to do something about sunken ship, sunken dreams. I don't know. We'll figure it out. Something nautical. It'll be fine. If you like this podcast and you want to tell a friend about it, yep, we recommend that.
Yeah.
You can also review us in the iTunes store. I don't know why I was like, hey, here's how you talk to your friends. If you didn't know. Also, check out thephantomentals.com. We are going to have new Game of Thrones merch.
Yes.
I have already designed a, what is it?
Possibly Impossible or whatever?
Plausible Impossibilities shirt. And that's going to be going up on the store in the next couple of weeks. We also have a few more Season 7 closing out ideas. They have a setting, okay? That was going to be one because I got an ask that said this. Okay. And maybe a character gumbo design, something like that.
Oh, I want a character gumbo like mug. I think that'd be great.
Yeah, right. Yeah, so we'll see. It's honestly dependent on my schedule, but yeah, check us out. We also write about all sorts of other things that aren't Game of Thrones, much better things that you should be reading and watching.
Go watch Crazy Ex-Girlfriend, everyone.
Go watch Crazy Ex-Girlfriend, yeah. And we're coming up on fall TV, so we'll have lots of reviews and stuff of that nature.
Oh yeah, American Horror Story is coming out.
Wow.
Yeah, okay. It is. Apparently that's an enjoyable thing.
Sometimes. It's very hit and miss.
That's not shocking at all. I'm holding my breath for Supergirl Season 3. We will see. We will see what it is. All right. Other than that, thank you so much for listening to us, and we will talk to you next time.
Bye, everyone.
Bye.
Then we came to season 6, where we were Sean Flossid, warty dicks, but still the writers failed to fix the demeaning way they script their chicks. The show is still a bro fest, and it definitely endorses incest, but don't put up a fight. Look, it's revenge, now everything's alright. Season 7's now done, for 2 years we can have fun, since Twitter won't be overrun with unearned praise from everyone. We'll be back for season 8. We promise we won't fillet, 'cause this show sucks. Game of Thrones sucks. Game of Thrones sucks. Game of Thrones.